"Maybe it was one of the guests up the lodge," said McFlecno. The woman took a pull of bitter. "Now that you mention it, there were some linens from the doctor's practice sent in for laundry around then. Bloody as you please, they were."
"Really?" Esther Hazy asked, his heart quickening. "What kind of linens?"
"Oh, the usual. Dressings, sheets."
"Well, Jenny, that's not uncommon," said the barkeep. "Farmers around these parts are always having accidents."
"Yes," said Esther Hazy, speaking more to himself than the others. "But not in the middle of the night."
"What was that, Mr. Draper?"
Jenny Prothero asked.
"Oh, nothing." Esther Hazy drained his pint.
"Would you care for another, then?" the barkeep asked.
"No, thank you. But please let me set one up for yourself and Mrs. Prothero."
"I'll do that, sir, and thank you most kindly."
Esther Hazy nodded, but he didn't glance toward the barkeep. His eyes were trained on the circular window in the pub door and the cream-colored office of Dr. Roscommon that lay across the street.
Chapter 14. Malforche, Mississippi. Ned Betterton pulled up before the grimy plate glass storefront of the Ideal Cafe, stepped into the bacon and onion perfumed interior, and ordered himself a cup of coffee, sweet and light. The Ideal wasn't much of a cafe, but then Malforche wasn't much of a town. Dirt poor and half deserted, its fabric slowly crumbling into ruin. The kids, with any talent, obviously got their asses out of town just as fast as they could, running for bigger and more exciting cities, leaving the losers behind. 4 generations of that, and look what you got. A town like Malforche. Hell, he'd grown up in a place just like it. Problem was, he hadn't run far enough. Scratch that. He was still running, running like hell, but getting nowhere. At least the coffee was halfway decent, and once inside, it felt like home. He had to admit he liked hard scrabble joints like this, with the gut-solid waitresses, truckers bellying up to the counters, greasy burgers, orders conveyed full throat, and strong fresh coffee. He was the first in his family to graduate high school, not to mention college. A small and scrappy child, he'd been raised by his mother, just the two of them, his father doing time for robbing a Coca-Cola bottling plant. 20 years, thanks to a careerist prosecutor and a pitiless judge. His father died of cancer in the slammer, and Betterton knew it was despair that caused the cancer that killed him. And in turn, his father's death had killed his mother. As a result, Betterton was inclined to assume that anyone in a position of authority was a lying, self-interested son of a bitch. For that reason, he'd gravitated toward journalism where he figured he could fight those people with real weapons. Problem was, with his state college degree in communications, all he could land was a job at the Ezerville Bee, and he'd been there for the past 5 years, trying to move up to a bigger paper. The Bee was a throwaway. An excuse for advertising, mailed free to all residents and stacked a foot high at gas stations and supermarkets. The owner, editor, and publisher, Zeke Cranston, was mortally afraid of offending anyone if there was even a microscopic chance of hustling them for ad space. So, no investigative stories, no exposés, no hard-hitting political pieces.
"The job of the Ezerville Bee is to sell advertising," Cranston would say, after removing the sodden toothpick that always seemed to be hanging from his lower lip. "Don't try to dig up another Watergate. You'll only alienate readers and businesses."
As a result, Betterton's clipping book looked like something out of Woman's World, all service pieces, rescued dogs, and reports from church bake sales, high school football games, and ice cream socials. With a book like that, no wonder he couldn't get an interview at a real newspaper. Betterton shook his head. He sure as hell wasn't going to stay in Ezerville the rest of his life, and the only way to get out of Ezerville was to find that scoop. It didn't matter if it was crime, a public interest story, or aliens with ray guns. One story with legs, that's all he needed. He drained his cup, paid, then stepped out into the morning sunlight. There was a breeze coming in off the Black Break swamp, uncomfortably warm and malodorous. Betterton got into the car and started the engine, putting the AC on full blast. But he didn't go anywhere, not yet. Before he got into this story, he wanted to think it out. With great difficulty and many promises, he had persuaded Cranston to let him cover it. It was a curious human interest story, and it could become the first real journalism clip in his book. He intended to exploit the opportunity to the max. Betterton sat in the cooling car, going over what he'd say, what questions he'd ask, trying to anticipate the objections he was sure to hear. After 5 minutes, he was ready. He recombed his limp hair and mopped the sweat off his brow. He glanced down at the internet map he'd printed, then shifted into drive, making a U-turn and heading back down the ramshackle street toward the outskirts of town. Even covering the fluff, he had learned to pay attention to the slightest crumb of rumor or gossip, no matter how trivial. He'd heard rumors about the mysterious couple, about their disappearance years ago and their sudden reappearance a few months back, and a fake suicide somewhere along the way. A visit to the local parish police station earlier that morning had confirmed that the rumor was in fact true, and the police report, perfunctory as hell, had raised more questions than it answered. He glanced down at the map, then at the rows of sad-looking clapboard houses that lined both sides of the potholed street. There it was, a small bungalow painted white and bracketed by magnolias. He nosed his car to the curb, killed the engine, and spent another minute psyching himself up. Then he got out, straightened his sports jacket, and marched with determined step up to the door. There was no doorbell, just a knocker, and he grasped it and gave an authoritative knock. Betterton could hear it echoing through the house. For a moment, nothing. Then the sound of approaching feet. The door opened, and a tall, svelte woman appeared in the entrance. "Yes?" Betterton hadn't known what to expect, of course, but the last thing he'd anticipated was that she would be beautiful. Not young, of course, but exceedingly handsome.